Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Patriots played the Rams, you might recall, in Super Bowl 53. New England played LA last night. But let's be very clear about this. Regardless of what happened the first time around, and regardless of what any of the Rams might think and what they might say, that was not a Super Bowl rematch last night. Nowhere near it. Tom Brady is in Tampa. So is Gronk. And the Patriots are a hollow version of the team that won 6 rings. You could throw all the rematch questions you want at the Rams. They might even bite a little bit, but they know that was not a rematch. Nobody is getting rings for winning on a Thursday night in December against a 500 football team. There's no banner going up in the rafters of that new stadium which reads, "Won a game in week 14. The Billy Joel sold-out concert banner in MSG thinks that a Week 14 banner is idiotic. But that doesn't mean that last night was not somewhat satisfying for the Rams, because you know it was. You know that it was, and it should be, especially for Sean McVay, because it was the Rams head coach who raked himself over the coals after losing to New England in the Super Bowl, and then last night he worked over Bill Belichick. I'm guessing for any coach, it must feel pretty damn good to get over on the hood, but especially for McVay. And the way he did it, too. That was a very Belichick-like performance from the Rams. Punishing ground game, a defense that takes away what you do best, and then makes you left-handed. I tried to warn you a couple of weeks back after they beat Tampa Bay on Monday night. The Rams are good. The Rams, in fact, could be really good. And I think that you forgot about them. I think a lot of you were sleeping on them, and you shouldn't have. Because while the offense is not that insane, supercharged offense that we saw in 2018, you know, that high-octane offense where they could put up 30 a game, this crew is still good enough. Last night, though, in fact, every night, it starts with their defense. Has there been a better coordinator hire this year than the Rams D coordinator, Brandon Staley? In fact, you know what? I'm going to say it. Make that future head coach, Brandon Staley. This guy's incredible. His crew last night was everywhere. They had 6 sacks. They allowed 3 points. That'd be a pretty good start. And then, of course, there was this.
Newton under center, takes the snap, play action, fakes, throws right. Oh! It's picked off, intercepted. Kenny Young on the pick. He's still going inside the Patriots 20, breaking free with a lead blocker, and he is into the end zone for the touchdown. An 80-yard pick 6 for Kenny Young. And just like that, it's 16-0 Rams.
Westwood 1. Now, was that a clever move by Aaron Donald to get his paws on the running back before he could get out to where Cam Newton was going to throw it? Of course. Was that a great play by Kenny Young? Hell yes. Hey, listen, I don't want to oversimplify the game that much, but if your defense scores more points than they allow, I really like your chances of winning. I really, really do. And that's exactly what the Rams did. They put 7 on the board. They allowed 3 to a team that had put up 45 on Sunday. And then they followed up that pick 6 with this goal line stand.
6:50 to play before halftime. Newton takes the snap, option near side, and he is buried behind the line of scrimmage as New England turns it over on downs. They lose 2 on 4th and goal.
4 plays from the 6-yard line, no points. And not just 4 plays, 4 runs from the 6, and the Rams would not budge. The Pats' biggest strength offensively? Well, hell, their only strength offensively is running it. And they ran straight into a freaking brick wall. Rams defensive tackle Michael Brockers, who had a couple of sacks, said that they heard about the Patriots' ground game, and then they just went all Mike Jordan with it. They took it personally. They took it extremely personally.
Coming into the game, we knew they had a great running game. That's what they did a lot. They ran the ball. We took that personally as a defense. If they said they were going to come in and try to run this ball, we were going to stop them. And that's what we did.
That is what they did. They held the Patriots to 3.7 yards per carry. And when the Pats can't run and they fall behind, you know they're not coming back. They're not coming back on anybody. Not if they fall behind like that. And they didn't. And for all that focus on the Rams offense and the ability to put up points in a hurry, Last night's game actually was summed up in one drive by the offense. That epic 16-play, 90-yard march that ate up nearly 10 minutes of the third quarter. That was a statement drive. In fact, Brockers called it, quote, a swagger drive. You know what that was? That was like the ultimate Belichick drive. How many times have you seen the Pats in December or January bludgeon somebody else like that? Bludgeon somebody with a long drive like that. You know, one player after another, picking up yards, chipping away, moving the sticks, and stabbing you in the heart over and over and over again. That's what the Pats used to do to people. That's what the Rams and others now do to the Pats. The Rams got the ball with 11:15 to go in the third quarter, and then they beat the Patriots over the head with Cam Akers over and over again. Remember earlier in the season when the knock on the Rams was their running game was inconsistent? Yeah, well, it was consistent last night, consistently smashing the Patriots in the face. Akers had 29 carries, 171 yards, and two receptions for 23 more. It felt like all of them came on that one drive. Belichick and his mullet-rocking son were powerless against the rookie. And Sean McVay knew it. Everybody knew it. That's why he kept calling run after run and just kept hammering away at the Patriots. And if you really want to grind the hood's gears, how about that sequence that unfolded when LA had that 4th-and-1 from the Patriot 4? Jared Goff tries to get them to jump. They don't. He calls timeout. You think maybe the Rams are going to make or kick a field goal to make it a 3-score game? Hell no. Because they didn't come this far to come this far. They came to finish. Again, a statement. One that Brockers and the Rams defense felt in a very big way.
Going forward on fourth down, and that goes back to what I said earlier. We play for one another. I think Sean felt it. You know, the O-line was rolling. They were, you know, controlling the line of scrimmage, and he felt like he can get it. But he also knew that, you know, the defense had the O's back. So if they didn't get it, we're going to go out there and get it back for him.
So they come back out of the timeout. Goff goes hard count. The Pats do jump. L.A. gets the first down, and then on the next play, this happens.
First and goal, got from the gun, rolls right, throws near side end zone. It is caught by Cooper Kupp for the Rams touchdown, and L.A. extends its lead to 23-3.
There are still questions about Jared Goff, but that was a perfect pass. 24-3. Turn out the lights. Thanks for coming. And at that point, Belichick was probably ready to turn off his headset. It's not like he needed it. It's not like he or any of his assistants were dialing up anything that worked. Man, how the mighty have fallen. How the mighty have fallen. For years, this is exactly what the Patriots did to other teams, not what other teams did to them. For two decades, the Patriots have been going on these soul-wrecking drives, wrecking you for your own mistakes, and now other teams do it to them. And last night was just the latest example. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again right now. When you write down a list of NFC favorites, you have to include the Rams. You have to include the Rams. I'm not going to use a cliche and say something like, yeah, well, they're peaking at the right time. But the fact is, in November and December, they have won 4 of 5, and their wins are over Seattle, Tampa Bay, Arizona, and New England. They've got the extra rest this week. Then they get more rest when they go up against the Jets next weekend. Rest up and ice up, fellas. You're going to be playing late into January, especially if Goff takes care of the football, because with a defense like that, they may very well be the team to beat in the NFC. Mark Cuban is my guest. Mark, I'm really sorry about that wait. It's been a minute or two since we last spoke. How are you doing, Mark? How is your life right now?
Romy, I'm talking to you. My life cannot be better.
My man, I so appreciate you saying that. So good to have you on, Mark. Thank you so much. Listen, this week the team had to say farewell to J.J. Barea. Let me start right there. I bring it up because he's a very special person. And to point that out, you actually signed him to a contract last month as a reward, knowing that you were probably going to release him. What has he meant to you personally and to your organization?
I mean, J.J. is a legend. I mean, the backstory on J.J. is we needed a point guard for a summer league team back in 2005, I think it was, and I just happened to be looking at stats, and there was this guy that kept on popping up from Northeastern that was scoring 20 and dishing out 9 assists. I'd never even seen him play, and I said to Donnie Nelson, I'm like, let's just bring him in for summer league and see if he can play the rest is history. He came in sight unseen and just dominated. And he's been great for the Mavs, great for the Dallas, great for Puerto Rico ever since.
Hey, clones, I got a question. What do we do when we're craving protein or we need some more energy? I can answer that question by saying what we don't need. We don't need bars. We don't need sugary snacks. We don't need energy drinks. No, what we need and what we really want is beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled or dry or tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? It says here it's so good because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Talking to Mark Cuban. Great story. Now, Mark, I hate to start this conversation off by kind of embarrassing you by singing your praises, but as some people know, you also reached out to somebody else that I go back a ways with, and the show does too, Delonte West. Back in September, photos emerged of Delonte that were very, very sad and very depressing. What did you think when you first saw those photos?
Heartbroken. I mean, Delonte's got a great heart, and you know, he's got his challenges. You know, mental illness is no joke, and it's going to be something he has to deal with his entire life. But, you know, I was just heartbroken like everybody else.
So the story goes out that you reached out to his mother to ask how you might help, and right. She told you to find Delonte. You did that. You reunited him with his mother and then helped him into rehab. Why was that something that you wanted to take on personally?
I mean, you know, it sounds bigger than it really is. I mean, he was 2.5 miles away from where I live. And so for me just to go up there and help somebody that, you know, I considered a friend who was in need, it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, it's just something that was the right thing to do. And, you know, but, you know, like anybody who's had to deal with people with mental illness and problems with drugs and other substances, you know, that's just the start. It's going to be a long road for D. West, and, you know, he's got to want to do it. And so hopefully as he comes out of rehab, he'll be able to make it all work.
Mark Cuban joining us. I would just say that you've tweeted photos of him kayaking and doing some other activities as part of his recovery. Every time I see one of those photos, it does make me smile. I understand that it is a process. It's going to be a long process. But those pictures do make me smile, so I'm really glad for that.
Yeah, he was living a better life than you or I, Jim.
Yeah, right? And he should. But you're right, though, Mark. He has a great heart, like a good person, a great heart. So I'm glad that he gets the opportunity. Now, as I mentioned off the top, your first preseason game, wow, I mean, that's something. Your first preseason game is tomorrow night. What's it like, Mark, to have such a quick turnaround from the end of last season to the start of this season?
I think the guys are ready. I mean, I was at practice today, and everybody was excited to play. I mean, initially it was a little bit like, okay, you know, are we ready for this? You know, how are we going to deal with COVID? What's it going to be like not being in the bubble? But now guys have adjusted. You know, the daily testing is going to turn into two-a-day testing now. And so guys recognize that, you know, you've got to take care of business in terms of protecting yourself from COVID and take care of business on the court. And they're ready. I mean, you know, you don't make that type of commitment personally to unless you really want to play. And so they're excited. Guys are fired up, and, you know, we should be better than last year.
Mark Cuban joining us. I'm going to ask you about the team in a second, but back to COVID. Like, you've called yourself, quote, a geeky guy, but the fact is you've done a ton of research on the COVID vaccine. What conclusions have you drawn from that research, and especially as it relates to everybody's ability to get back out and go to games again?
You know, one, sign me up. I mean, I'll be first in line. If they want to put me on live TV or a stream to show people that it's safe, I'm happy to do it. And I think as people gain confidence in it to the level that I have and see that it works, I think come March or April, you know, we're going to have a huge snapback. I mean, you know, there's so much pandemic fatigue and people just so worn out and stressed, you know, and so much anxiety from all this. I think people are going to go nuts. I mean, Vegas is going to be bacchanalia. You know, it's just going to be out of control. But also, you know, the NBA will be in season now because we started later. And I think, you know, we'll be able to get to a point where we have fans back, full arenas, and people going nuts because it'll be such a great stress release.
So, Mark, what do you think that's going to be like? For instance, you've always made the point in the past that the NBA is not in the business of selling basketball, but rather in the business of selling fun, of selling unique emotional experiences. So how's that going to impact the way you approach the experience that you want people to have when they are in the arena or even at home watching a game when it all comes back?
So there's two things there, Jim. One is in the short term. Right now, we're not letting fans in for our preseason game. You know, hopefully if the case counts come down some by the time we have a home opener on December 30th, then we'll be able to have up to 25%, which would be 5,000 people. And we've been able to have it work for Disney on Ice and for some high school basketball tournaments. But, you know, it's interesting watching those events because people try harder to make noise and to connect with people. But at the same time, they realize they can't scream and yell like they would have just because of COVID. So that's in the interim, and we'll do everything possible to make sure everybody's safe. It'll be safety first for players, families, and fans. But like I said, come spring, at some point when, you know, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, 60% of people have taken the vaccine and everybody's confident to go out, it's going to be crazy. I mean, you know, for the first time since March 11th, it'll be over a year most likely from the time everything started to shut down for the pandemic to us being able to go out there and hang out with people and not be afraid, scream and yell at a game, you know, be there with friends, hug people, touch people, you know, just be nice to people. It's just going to be so different, and I think it's going to be so amazing because, like I mentioned earlier, just that anxiety from not being able to do it for so long, I think that snapback is going to be outrageous.
You took my word. I was going to say it sounds amazing. It sounds amazing the way you lay that out. You know, Mark, I'm really curious. Everybody's life has been so radically altered over the past 9 months. I'm curious, how have you gone about approaching this time? How have you changed?
You know, more because of family. My kids now are 11, 14, and 17, and my 11 and 14-year-old are kind of scared of it. My 17-year-old daughter's afraid of nothing.
Right.
You know, and thinks she knows everything, and that's been the biggest challenge. That's just the nature of being 17 years old and, you know, and trying to convey to her the importance of this and the risk. And it's been challenging, I'm not going to lie, and it's been an ongoing discussion and struggle for my wife and I with her. But, you know, she's smart, but she just thinks, look, you know, Dad, I haven't caught it so far. What makes you think I'm going to catch it now? And I'm like, you know, there's 250,000 people, you know, that caught it today that as of yesterday thought they were safe. And, you know, and so you just have to be careful. So that's been the biggest challenge for us. But, that, you know, we're still fortunate. We can segregate ourselves to a certain extent and a lot of other people can't. We're really blessed from that perspective.
Mark Cuban joining us. One quick thing, Mark, I want to ask you about Luka, because those who know have long known about Luka. You've been around great athletes, great business people. You've seen greatness in all different walks of life, so you know it when you see it. What is it about Luka that makes him so special?
His desire to be great, his willingness to put in the effort. There's a lot of people that have come into the NBA with great talent, great athleticism, and that's what they have. They don't necessarily work at it. They don't necessarily understand the game. Luka is all those things. He's got size. He's got athleticism. He's got, you know, the basketball junk to him. He's got a basketball IQ. But most important, he's got this willingness to work hard. And just as important is he recognizes that fans and the community he's in are an important part of his job, if you will, or just his, you know, who he is. It's important to him to connect to kids, to connect to the community. And those are the things you see with greatness, whether it's in basketball or in any business. People who want to be the best but recognize the people around them are just as important.
Got about 60 seconds, Mark. In business, like when you're looking to hire, how important is future success for anybody in any industry about talent and IQ versus grind and grit?
I'll take grind every time. You know, there's two things that I look for. One, are you a grinder? Are you willing to work hard? And two, are you a learner? Do you recognize that things are always changing and you have to always keep on learning? Give me somebody from a small state school that, you know, has an accounting degree, that is always learning and updating their information and updating their knowledge. I'll take that every day over the Harvard grad.
Mark Cuban, my guest. Mark, what's it been like being a regular on Shark Tank?
You mean Shark Tank every Friday night on ABC at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central? It's amazing.
I figured as much. He is an entrepreneur. He is an investor. He is an author. He is a regular on Shark Tank. He is the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. Mark, so good to have you back in the jungle. You've always been good to the program, and it's great to talk to you, Mark. Thank you so much.
You're the best, Romy. I wouldn't be here without you on the Extra 690 coming on AudioNet. People don't realize you were one of the first shows on radio that gave us the permission to stream, and you helped build the streaming industry, and you helped build my career, so I'm always thankful.
My man, did I just hear that correctly?
Yes,
Mark
you did.
Cuban. Appreciate you, Mark, so much.
Always, Jimmy. Take care, buddy.
Thank you. All right, so in the spirit of the season, why don't we take a minute, and I did mention this, but why don't we take a moment and why don't we wrap something up? Why don't we put a nice big bow on a long-running topic here in the jungle? The topic of the Huntington Beach City Council election, of course. Now, if maybe you're just kind of bumping around and you dropped in on the TV version, the simulcast on CBS Sports Network, and you're wondering why somebody like me, who hosts a nationally syndicated radio program, would be delving into local politics, the local politics of a SoCal surf town, why that would even be a thing on this show. It's not because of the politics, because politics are not a thing on this show, but rather it's a series of events which kind of manifested themselves right here, which led to an all-time jungle legend running directly against an all-time MMA icon for one of the three open seats on the city council.
MMA Hall of Famer Tito Ortiz has entered a different type of battle here in his hometown, Huntington Beach.
I'm here just to make it safe for the future of my children, my grandchildren, and my community.
It's the same fight the surfer is also facing. Eric Silkinson, which the locals know as Silk Bra, usually fights for waves in the lineup, but here on dry land, he's going for a different ride.
Ah, yes. One of the defining moments of 2020 in the jungle. Our very own substitute teaching, volleyball narking, smack off winning Silk Bra versus face punching, rear naked choking, Hall of Faming Tito Ortiz. Now, I don't have time to reset the entire 6-month saga, which led us from a rat tweet to a rat race. But I will remind you, Tito finished first out of 15 candidates, while Eric got waxed like a surfboard and finished 12th with just 3.5% of the vote. Eric, however, has promised that he will be back in 2 years to run again. But in the meantime, Tito was getting sworn in Tuesday night, I think. I say I think because honestly, I'm not sure whether or not he actually did take an oath to office. I think that he did. But upon hearing it, I'm not sure. Upon hearing it, I'm going to say there's a pretty good chance they're going to make him run it back. They're going to call him back to the chambers and make him try once again. Because honestly, I have no idea whether or not he agreed to or what he agreed to Tuesday night at City Hall. I don't know that he agreed to anything at all. Let's see if you can help me, because I really don't know. Again, what you're about to hear is from Tuesday night, because it does take a minute for a local news item at City Hall to break through on the national level. However, Tito's oath is now officially making the rounds, partly because he's Tito, and partly because of how it went, and how it sounded, and what he said, and what he did not say. And understand this, Tito wasn't just taking an oath to be sworn in as a city council member. He was taking an oath to be sworn in as the mayor pro tem, which in layman's terms means should anything happen to the current mayor, Tito would be next in line. He would assume the position and officially be the head honcho in HB. You want to talk about cutting the line? There are at least four other city council members who have been there for 6 years. Tito hasn't been there 6 minutes, yet he's about to take an oath to become the backup mayor. You know, next man up. Now, in fairness, I've got no idea if backup mayor was something that the other four city council members were even interested in. I'm not even sure why it's set up like that. I just know that it is. I just know that Tito is, in fact, next in line to run that town with no experience. Come to find out, dude sounds like he has next to no experience actually speaking. Anyway, here is Tito taking a repeat after me oath Tuesday night. Spoiler alert, it did not go well.
I, Tito Ortiz,
do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend.
Do I solemnly swear?
Well, in defense, he got the Tito Ortiz part right. I'll give him that. But when the person swearing him in got to the part where she said, do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend, it all went straight to hell.
I, Tito Ortiz,
do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend.
Do I solemnly swear?
Here's a very loose transcript of what he just repeated. And I quote, I, Dilla, Solly, was, do I, Solly, swear?
Do I solemnly swear?
Do I solemnly swear? Is that a question?
Yeah. Well, was that a question? Yeah, I think so.
Maybe not. It sounds like a question. The guy is supposed to be taking an oath, not asking questions of himself about the oath.
Do I solemnly swear?
I mean, Tito, I don't know. Do you?
Do I solemnly swear?
Unfortunately for Tito, there was a lot left in the oath that he still had to get to. Like the very next part where the woman reading to him asked him to repeat. I do solemnly affirm.
I do solemnly affirm.
Solemnly affirm. Solly a foreign? You know, solemnly affirm, solly a foreign. Solemnly affirm, solly a foreign, tomato, tomato.
I do solemnly affirm.
Solly a farm? I don't know. Credit to Tito, though, for breezing right through the middle part of the oath. But man, that damn lady and her wonky script got him again when she asked him to repeat a part about well and faithfully discharging the duties.
I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties.
Memo to all of the Judies in HB. Memo to all the Judies in HB. Tito is coming to discharge you.
Discharge the duties.
All you Julias and Chains and Jessicas, you can stay. You're fine. But all you Judies, you're out of here.
Discharge the duties.
This is all pretty painful. This is all pretty painful, so what do you say we just wrap this thing up? Tito, get the plane down. Just land the bleeping plane, T.
About which I'm about to enter.
As a council member of Huntington Beach. Thank you, Mike, very much.
So, with that golf clap, let me ask the question, and I mean this sincerely. Why are they clapping? Are they clapping because Tito was just sworn in and that was a historic moment for Huntington Beach? Or are they clapping because it's finally over? Honestly, if I did not see that video, I would have guessed I was listening to somebody speaking in tongues. Seriously, what language was that? I will say this. The residents of HB better hope that nothing does happen to the current mayor, because this is the guy who is getting loose in the on-deck circle.
Do I solemnly swear?
I do solemnly affirm. Discharge the duties.
Holy crap. So in closing, I've got two things to say. Number one, good luck with that, good citizens of HB. And number two, hey, Eric, how the hell did you lose to that?
I just solemnly swear. Do I solemnly swear?
I do solemnly
affirm.
Discharge the duties.
Discharge the duties.
I do solely a farm? Do you own or rent your home? Of course you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy though? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you already have so much to do around your house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Mike Magpio is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you on the show. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great, Rome. This is awesome, man. This is a thrill for me.
Mike, this you know what? This is a thrill for me. This is awesome. I'm proud of you, Gaucho. I'm really proud of you. I want to talk to you about your Gaucho background. There's a lot of things I want to hit on, Mike, but let me just jump right into this thing. You're coming off a win over Northern Arizona last night, 74-50. It's a game where you went on the road. You jumped out to a 27-point lead at halftime. How pleased were you with the way your guys handled their business on the road?
I mean, as pleased as you can be. These guys are just like aggressive. You know, they come out when we it's crazy the way it goes right now. Is you get tested three times a week, and the night before you basically know, okay, your opponent's tested negative for COVID, we're tested negative, and once we know that there's a game, our guys just attack this thing with reckless abandon. So obviously first half felt really good about it, and we ended up winning by 20 plus points. So it was a great win on the road.
Mike Magpie was my guest. It was a great win on the road. I like that explanation too, that you're just going day to day. That's all you can do. That's all any of us can do, but especially right now. Now, you were the associate head coach last season, and then you were named head coach over the summer when the previous head coach, David Patrick, went to join my guy, Eric Musselman, in Arkansas. In talking to coaches over the years, a lot of them, Mike, talk about that move from one seat over. I mean, it might be like a half a foot, but how different is that move from just one seat over? And what have the first few months been like for you as a head coach?
That was a wild summer. You know, I got the job July 1st, and it was just a crazy time. Basically, I was coaching through Zoom for the first 3 months, trying to retain the team and trying to keep their attention. So just that in that first 2 to 3 months was a challenge to keep these guys engaged and keep the team intact. You know, luckily for us, the old coach and our program had a really good culture, and we were able to have 100% retention. We have all the guys back. But it was hard, man. We didn't get the guys back to campus until October 1st. So from July 1st to October 1st, we were just, our staff and myself were just trying to, you know, keep them engaged in different kinds of Zooms. I mean, we got so good at doing these presentations on Zoom. All I wanted to do was just get a practice in on the court. But, you know, so far so good. Obviously, we've gotten off to a good start.
Gotten off to a great start, and there's so much more to that. As if that weren't challenging enough, and you're a first-time head coach, then you have your son, the birth of your son, Luca. I mean, then you have fatherhood, right? And then you come back the following week, and you beat Washington by 15 in a game that was arranged less than 24 hours before tip. Now, let me tell you, Mike Hopkins is one of the most respected coaches around. What did it mean to you to get your first win, against Washington?
Well, I think that I'm literally sitting here in the baby's room, surrounded by diapers in the crib, and he's downstairs with my wife. That was crazy because I flew to our first game and landed in Sacramento. We were about to play Pacific, and Caroline, my wife, called and said her water broke, and you know, we weren't due until December 19th to January 5th in that area. So I flew right back, missed the first game, and I think just, you know, you've got kids, and I'm new to it, just 2 weeks in here, but just puts things in perspective, just kind of calmed me down a little bit. And the Washington thing was kind of, our Fresno State game got canceled. They had a positive test, and kind of just my athletic director, Tamika, was like, let's just go for it. You know, it'd be a great experience playing Vegas, playing the arena, T-Mobile Arena, empty arena, which you kind of need if we get to the Big West tournament. And our guys were just so fired up to play. They were so bummed about Fresno State that they just wanted in. So we went out there, and
I thought about that too, because I know Coach Hopkins is. I was like, the only thing Coach Hopkins and I have in common is our names, Mike. Like he's so experienced. He's from modern day out here, and you know, our guys just had a great performance in that game. Obviously, it was a great first win for me as well.
It's such an amazing win for you in the program, and like this in and of itself, Mike, would be an amazing story. But it's so much more amazing because it all starts at UC Santa Barbara. You know, Gaucho to Gaucho. I have to know.
Yeah.
What was it about UCSB that made it feel like that was the place you wanted to be? What was it like for you as a Gaucho? What were you like when you were there?
Oh, my guys are all sabotaging. I mean, they're texting me right now trying to screw me on this call right in this interview. I mean, obviously, there's four. I feel like there's Jim Rome. We repped hard when we were at Santa Barbara. Michael Douglas and Jack Johnson. Those are the guys that we were really proud of, proud Gauchos. But I was a different guy back there. I wasn't nearly the same coach and mature human that I am today. as you know, I was.
Oh, I know, man. I've been there. I did all that long before you got there. I know.
I remember hearing stories where I think you started at the radio station there as well. So, you know, I was just having a great time. I remember just visiting and just thinking it was the most beautiful place ever. And I begged my parents to let me go there. And my dad took out a student loan for me and off I went. So I was a different guy. The one thing that the tipping point was the junior year. A guy named Bobby Castagna. I was just like wrecking games in intramural basketball and playing.
By the way, can't jump in there. What a good guy Bobby Castagna is.
Oh, you know, great.
I know Bobby. Great personality, man. Great energy, great personality, right?
He's the best. And he was running the intramural department. He's like, hey, I got this eighth grade boys basketball team in Hope Ranch. Do you have any interest in coaching? And that was my first coaching job. So I started coaching eighth grade boys and girls while I was in college and then just kept coaching on and on for the next decade or so.
That's incredible. All right. So Bobby Castagna hooks you up. Hope Ranch is a very, very wealthy enclave that's near Santa Barbara.
Sure.
You're coaching eighth grade kids. Even more amazing, though, you are the founder and CEO of a multi-million dollar real estate firm. How did you get into real estate? What was that like?
Man, that was, you know, I was in the business world. I was working in commercial banking when I graduated from college, but I'd always coach a high school basketball team every year just to kind of between November and February. But, you know, I just, during the mortgage boom, I started working at a mortgage company for a guy in Redondo Beach. And then my best friend, Gaucho, Gil Manzuri, shout out to Gil, and I decided to start our own company.
What up, Gil?
He's going to love that. In 2003. And, you know, we went through the real estate boom. In all fairness, it was a lot of people were doing well. And we were all over the radio stations in Southern California. That was the only other time I was on the radio station besides today, was doing those cheesy ads against West from Lennox Financial. It was us against them. Our radio, MSM, WeDoLend.com was our tagline. So we were crushing it. And then 07, 08, you know, we were dying, you know, crashing as the rest of the real estate market was, but we survived. We barely came out the other side in 09 and 2010. And that's kind of where the story got started with my coaching career in college. Is I said, you know what, I gotta learn. If we're going to have this real estate company, we can't go through this. So I was going to get my master's at NYU. And I just wrote letters to all the colleges in New York City. And one responded, one college coach responded to me, and it was Kyle Smith at Columbia. And he had me come in, and long story short, he was like, you want to volunteer here for a couple months? And I started volunteering, and he ended up saying, hey, if you want to come in, you got to give it all up. You got to sell your company. You can't go to NYU, and you know, I'll hire you on staff as the low man on staff in 2010, and I did it, and I jumped in. And so 10 years later, here we are.
That's absolutely amazing. An amazing story. Mike McPiley is joining us for a few more moments. So then you're there and you're part of a staff ultimately that includes Colin Hartman, who's now Lon Kruger's lead assistant at Oklahoma.
Yep.
Kobe Altman, the Cavaliers GM. Todd Golden, who is now USF's head coach. And I'm sure you learn a lot there. At one point, though, you had a conversation with Smith and Altman, who are both members of the Jewish Coaches Association, that you should start the Filipino Coaches Association. What do you remember about that? And then what was the first meeting of the Asian Coaches Association at the 2012 Final Four like?
Oh, that's so fun. I mean, you've done your homework, Rome. It was just as you described it. We're sitting in the summer, and Kobe and Kyle and myself were just sitting in the office, and they just said, why don't you start the Filipino Coaches Association? And the joke was like, I'm like, Coach Smith, there's two of us, me and Eric Spoelstra. Because Kyle would always introduce me at camps as the second best Filipino coach in the world. And so I said, all right, I'll do the Asian coaches. I'll start the Asian Coaches Association kind of just on a whim. And I started one event at the Final Four in 2012 in Houston, and we had 13 people show up. I got a great photo of it. And six of them were the Columbia staff, you know. And so what I figured out, and this is probably attributed to my UC Santa Barbara days, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to have an open bar. So the next few years, I got a sponsor and just had an open bar and just invited everybody because I figured it would help us network, because there's not a ton of Asian coaches in the business. And, you know, year after year, people like to come have a beer, and it just grew. It grew, and the last one we had, which was 2 years ago because there was no Final Four last year in Minneapolis, Coach Spoelstra came, and we had about 150 guys there, and it was our biggest event ever.
That is so great. 150, 200 coaches now showing up. You mentioned Eric Spoelstra. So, I mean, I'm sure, Mike, you never set out to do it like this. You never set out to be a pioneer, but you are now considered one of the pioneers. What's it feel like to be a pioneer who can open the door for others?
You said it. I mean, I never thought about it. You know, even when I got the job, it was the furthest thing from my mind that I was a pioneer. And you know, actually, shout out to Coach Walters, who was the true first coach of Asian descent. I'll say I'm the first full Filipino, first full Asian is what I've learned over this last few months. But you know what? All I want to do is just do right and just hopefully open a door for others. You know, and you know, I know my staff is probably the only staff, Division I staff in the country that has two Asian coaches, myself and my director of operations, Jordan Lee. So just trying to do right by this position, and most importantly, just try to get as many wins as I can and you know, open the door for the next generation.
Mike Magpie was the head basketball coach at UC Riverside. I want to be sure, like I am really, really so happy, man. So happy to meet you. So proud of you as a member of the Gaucho fam. And I want to pay proper respect to UC Riverside because we're part of like, you know, the Big West, and the UC system is very important to me. But I didn't want to get too caught up in the whole Gaucho thing, Mike, but it's amazing what you've accomplished and where you are right now. So I mean that sincerely, man. I am really, really proud of you and really happy that we got to do this. And just know this is not the last time we're going to do this. Now, you know my loyalties are to the Gauchos. You understand that. I hope we kick your ass.
I know. My athletic director is going to kill me for talking about the Gauchos too. It's about the Highlanders. It's not the Highlanders now, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, I get that. I know you're going to be looking to kick our ass, but I know you respect that. No, we want to kick your ass, but nothing but love and respect. Is there anybody else you need to shout out while you're on before you go?
Oh, man. This is my wife, Caroline. You know, I came home, and I'm like, are you okay? And she's just killing it with our baby, Luca. And, you know, I got right in there at 1:30. I had the feeding and diaper change, and
at
5 a.m. I got right in there, try to help out, and she's a superwoman. So just shout out to my wife, Caroline.
You got it. Mike, great to have you on the show, man. Thank you so much. And we will do it again soon.
Thank you.
All right, Big Head, let's get right into it because we're up against it already. I hate to say it. I mean, do what you got to do, and we'll have time. If we run long, we run into Alvin's time. Steelers and Bills. I love that game. Let me start right there. Steelers and Bills. Sunday night's game is Pittsburgh at Buffalo. The Steelers are coming off their first loss. The Bills look great against the Niners last time out. The Steelers lead the world in drops. Josh Allen is playing lights out. What's the line on that game that you see, and how are you going to play that game?
I got +2.5 right now for the Steelers, Jim, and yes, I'm going to hit that too. Now, most of the money is on Buffalo, but I like Pittsburgh there. I know the Steelers have been a shell themselves the last 2 weeks. I think everybody's seen that, but there's a couple things that I really like for this Steelers matchup. They should be able to throw the ball against this Bills defense, and that's what Pittsburgh does. And the second thing, Josh Allen, he's rightfully passed Weird Rush in the NFL MVP odds. But he is, his thing is buying time in the pocket.
Hey, Tito, yeah. Tito, slow down, Tito. What's your problem today, man? Slow down, bro. Slow down. Let me, you gather yourself for a minute there, Tito. Big Head. I like that you said that Pittsburgh's thing is they throw the ball. I mean, yes, I guess, but you know what their thing is also? They drop the ball. a lot.
No, they, like you said earlier, they drop the ball. They lead the league in drops, but their pass rush is incredible, Jim. It leads the league in sacks with 44 and 114 quarterback hits. And like I said about Josh Allen, where I want to get to on that one, he loves buying time in the pocket, and that does not bode well for this Pittsburgh defense. They are the toughest team in the NFL to throw against, Jim, allowing under 200 yards a game. And as long as Pittsburgh, like you said, can catch the football, I like the Steelers here. They are 2-0 against the spread as a dog this season. Let's make it 3-0. Let's take the points. +2.5 Steelers.
I got to be honest with you. I like Buffalo, but it is interesting
most
that you can get +2.5. If you can get +2.5 for an 11-1 team, that's something you have to look at. I also like your point that isn't it ironic that Josh Allen likes to hold on to the ball, but Ben is the guy who gets it out quickly now. That's pretty ironic.
That's all right, changed.
So
yep.
What about this, Big Head? Bucks and Vikings. Yeah. You've spent a lot of time thinking about and betting the Bucks. Now, the Bucks are great against the run. The Vikings obviously have a killer in Dalvin Cook, who you know I love, but something's got to give. +6.5. You can get the Vikes +6.5 if you want them. How are you approaching it?
So Minnesota is rolling via the spread as a road dog. So taking the points, Jim, it isn't a bad play at all, but I'm hitting the old man in the Bucks once again. Like you said, it's going to come down to Cook against that Tampa Bay run D. They've allowed 3.3 yards all year, Tampa Bay's run D has. And for the Vikings, everything runs off that ground game. If they stop Cook, jump out quick, they could bury that play action and make Kurt Cousins one-dimensional.
Kurt.
As for the Bucs' offense, though, on paper, their weapons, they should absolutely have a field day against this Vikings defense. Ronald Jones, their O-line, Chris Godwin, and even Mr. Big Chess. They all have extremely favorable matchups, Jim. If Tommy doesn't mess this up, I like the Bucks -6.5.
I keep forgetting about Mr. Big Chest. You know, you mentioned Kirk Cousins is such an awesome dude, but do you trust him? Like, if they need him to win that game, do you think he can?
No, not as a drop back shotgun kind of guy. I trust him off the play action and running Gary Kubiak's offense, but not as a no.
Dude, you love Kubiak, don't you?
I love Kubiak. I love the Shanahans. I love McVay. I love all those guys. But stop that run and make him one dimensional. You can usually, you know, you like your odds there.
Okay, speaking of odds, another really interesting matchup. You've got the Colts, and they're -2.5 at Vegas. Critical matchup for both the Colts and the Raiders. And the truth is, to me, Head, I'm never exactly sure what I'm going to get from either one of those teams week to week. Again, the Colts are -2.5. Who do you like?
I like the Colts here. The biggest mismatch of the entire week in the trenches is the Indy line in their run game against the Raiders. They should blow Vegas off the line here. And if the Raiders counter by bringing more guys in the box, Uncle Phil Rivers, he should have a heyday against that secondary. And he is familiar with the Raiders, which I don't know if that's good or bad because they're familiar with Phil too. But the biggest concern I got for Indy, Jim, is their red zone defense. The Raiders will nickel and dime them all the way down the field. The Colts just have to be better in the red zone here. But the M.O. for Indy is Uncle Phil is good. They usually win. I like the Colts -2.5.
All right, Colts -2.5. Is there any other game? Those are the three that I kind of had an interest in. Is there anything else that you're looking at that interests you, where you think, where you see value, where you can get paid?
Yeah, I'm going to go Titans -7.5. The Jags, look, they're not winning, but they are covering to their credit. I like the Titans here, though, and they need badly to win this football game. The lack of talent on the Jaguars, I mean, it's all over on their defense. They're not very good there. And I'm also relying on Mike Glennon, Jim. He has a long neck, and if you think he'd be able to recognize coverages a little quicker, that's not the case. If he turns the ball over a couple times for me, I like the Titans -7.5 right here.
Dude, would you mind resetting your take on why you like Mike Glennon? Did you just say you like him because he has a long neck, which would enable him to see the coverages more clearly? Is that what I just heard?
That's what I said. Now, throughout his career, it hasn't happened. I don't know why. Maybe he's more comfortable in Jacksonville, but he does have an extra advantage, a couple inches, I think, there.
Is that why he's getting to play and our guy Minshew is not? When Minshew's like, man, just give me an opportunity. Let me back in there. Is it does it come down to the size of the neck?
Yeah.
Or length of the neck?
Minshew could probably win a game or two here, and I don't think they really want to do that right now. So
it's a good point.
Throw Glennon out there.
It's a good point. Do me a favor really quickly. Can you run down the four picks again so they know in case they missed it, they got to get their crayons out, they want to get paid. What are the four picks?
Steelers +2.5. Bucks minus 6.5, Colts minus 2.5 to 3 right there. Take that, hit that, and the Titans cover minus 7.5.
He is the big head, James Kelly. At him if you have thoughts. If he's made you money, give him credit. If not, at him anyway. He knows. Good job, head. Well done. Good luck this weekend. Let's go to Jeff in Southfield. What's going on, Jeff?
Thank you for the fine, Jim. This call is aimed at that flea graveyard, better known as Paul's dog. Listen to me, you mouse-breathing, walnut-brained son of a bitch. Don't even think about getting cocky about that golden ticket. We all know your bark is worse than your bite, and I've seen better bark on dead trees. Hey, Paul's dog, if you're not already snipped, you will be in the smack-off. Then the only tail you'll be chasing is your own, because you can't bury the bone you no longer have. Face it, Paul's dog, Cujo would crush you. Lassie's laughing at you, and Benji thinks you're a bitch. And I'd say you're the mangiest mutt I've ever seen, but I've seen pictures of Dan in Denver. Seriously, you're too disgusting to be Matt Patricia's dog. Bottom line, Paul's dog, not only are you not wearing the pants in this relationship, you're not even wearing pants. Now stop barking and go eat your Alpo, loser. I'm cooking steak.
Jeff in Southfield, go ahead and rack him. Him going in on Paul's dog. Hey, Paul's dog! Benji thinks you're a bitch. Paul's dog. Let's go to Jeremy in Green Bay. Jeremy, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. And the reason I called, I heard Matt and Van's clap back at Rick yesterday, and his smack was softer than Caleb's back fat. I don't claim I'm the biggest tough guy in the jungle, but compared to you, Matt, I'm Godzilla on steroids. This isn't Tyson versus Jones. Nobody wants to see you two jungle has-beens fight again. I looked up the 2020 Smack-Off rankings, and you both had a big, fat DNF next to your names. Did not finish. There's new blood in this jungle, and we're tired of the old guard and your played-out rivalries. So for the brand, Matt, step aside and let an American fight your wars like we always do, you soft-ass Canadians. But I want to give Rick the props he's so badly seeking. I mean, he shows great range as a caller, Jim. I love those calls where he talks very loudly about the Bills winning, or those other calls where he gasps for air after ranting very loudly about the Bills losing. Screaming your entire call can't be good for your blood pressure, bro. I'm seriously worried you're going to have a stroke after you hang up. For your sake, I hope it doesn't happen, Rick, because your old man's waiting to greet you in the afterlife to give you one last ass-kicking. Rick, you remind me of one of those Russian nesting dolls, because every time someone slaps the piss out of you, you come back as a smaller, more annoying version of yourself. What's that old saying? Don't bring a knife to a gunfight? Well, don't bring your loud mouth to a fist fight, moron. When I get done jacking your jaw, all you'll have left is empty threats. And the last thing you'll hear is, that's one shot, kid. That's one shot. Oh, and Rick, about the only thing believable from your call was that you have no problems in the bedroom, but not because you're LV between the sheets. But after 10 years of marriage, your wife sleeps in the other room, doesn't she? I can't imagine the trauma that having to watch you climax has put that poor woman through, Ricky. And clones, I'm sorry for that hideous mental image in your head right now of Rick going wide right in the moment as he screams at his wife, I'm Rick in Buffalo. Oh, oh.
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a great weekend. The year is winding down. It is December 7th. We're running out of time. So what do you say you get up in here, make it happen? The Sunday Night Gamer. It did give us this sound.
Ah! It's so cold! Yeah!
And like everything else that Kelce does, it was awesome.
Gotta love it, baby. Gotta love
score
it, man.
Again!
Four touchdowns.
So, yes, they were calling this a show me and prove it game for Baker Mayfield. Yeah, well, he showed y'all, and then he shoved it all right up your rectum. Damn near killed him. 290 yards. Thank you, Albie.
Wake up. Toe tap.
Ruggs has got it. Touchdown. Jackpot, baby.
You got to help Vegas us out at the same time. Just being a better caller at that spot.
Do you really think that Greg Williams gives two who the quarterback is for this team next year.
That
is the kind of call that would get a defensive coordinator fired, which is exactly why Greg Williams was fired. Michael Lombardi.
I thought it was malpractice at the highest level of coaching. He thinks people actually come to watch him call defenses, and he should have been fired last night.
You're now officially accepting submissions for clone holiday cards to be used on the TV show. No porn, no drugs, no alcohol, no innuendo. Great, Rome. What are we supposed to put on our holiday cards? Mac Brown. Your daughter Catherine won nearly $23,000.
Correct. I asked her if I could get some of that money for my retirement fund. I am really proud of her.
Hey, Paul, what's up? How are you?
First off, I'd like to really, my dog's barking. Jim, I want to, extend your support to the equine industry. Oh, Alvin's getting me.
Now I've got something for you, Paul. Or rather, something for your dog. I've got a golden gave a dog a golden ticket. Hey, Paul, can you shut your mouth for a minute? I got a few things I need to bark out.
Much respect.
The fourth touchdown pass tonight
for Josh Allen.
This guy is a baller. So let's put some respect on him, the Bills, and the Bills Mafia.
9-3 is an accident. We should be 10-1.
I can hear you now. Who's this guy from Buffalo? Buffalo? Well, Bob, this town is too raw for you. And don't you know we're loco?
Sean Payton is my guest. Sean, what about Drew Brees?
I think it's a great question. This is the first week he's eligible to come off reserve injured. He's making progress. I saw him this morning in the building. We'll kind of see how this week progresses.
I want to hear from a stockbroker. Do any of you remember that internet fund? Munder NetNet. DJ Reed.
JUCO, I would just say it was a beautiful struggle. Obviously, having no money, just trying to hustle, made me really feel, you know, fortunate and blessed when I did go to Kansas State, when I was eating 3 meals a day.
When an opponent is yelling easy money.
I'd say the Cowboys didn't show up last night, but here's the sad part. They did. That's actually who they are.
How about them Cowboys?
He is DeMarcus Ware.
That introduction goes with appreciation. I mean, you always blow it up and make sure that the crowd knows who they're talking to.
Darius Butler. Is gambling the best thing ever or the worst thing ever?
I got sucked into the world, man. I know every line. I still love the game for the game, but it's just an entire different thing that comes with it. It's stressful, man.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
You know what time sunset is at my house today, Romy?
Talk to me.
4:02.
So get your garbage out of my way.
The stay-at-home uncle is back.
Fragile leg lamp up in the front window.
Oof, my dog.
Why the hell does Matt love dogs so much? Then it hit me. He's been married to one for 10 years.
A lean, clean, mean, smack-talking Canadian versus a 4-foot-tall, angry, screaming human penis on Fight Island.
Get your junk with stem cell injections.
Hey, you go from porn to penises pretty quick.
Yeah, right?
My did look like it'd been run over by a semi-truck for a few days.
It's a dream come true to have a good team in Cleveland and have a better person up front driving that bus, leading that bandwagon.
I gives him fits.
Putting on the red. You know what I like about this, too? This isn't one of those deals, like one of those morning shows where you pay for some service that makes comedic bits or parodies. These are listener submitted. Now, that said, stop. He's AJ Hinch.
You were really wrong. Reflecting back, it's always easy to say, I should have done it or I could have done something. Or coming on your show, I mean, it's such an awesome audience. And it's like you want to try and find something witty to talk about, but you just got to wear it and understand how wrong it was.
Of Rick going wide right in the moment as he screams at his wife, I'm Rick in Buffalo. Oh, oh.
Bottom line, Paul's dog, not only are you not wearing the pants in this relationship, you're not even wearing pants. Now stop barking and go eat your Alpo, loser.
Good luck with that, good citizens of HB. And number two, hey, Eric, how the hell did you lose to that?
Discharge the duties.
Mike McPile is joining us. You know my loyalties are to the Gauchos. I hope we kick your ass.
I know. My athletic director is going to kill me for talking about the Gauchos too, but it's about the Highlanders.
Mark Cuban, my guest.
You're the best, Romy. I wouldn't be here without you on the Extra 690 coming on AudioNet. People don't realize you were one of the first shows on radio that gave us the permission to stream, and you helped build the streaming industry, and you helped build my career, so I'm always thankful.
My man.
Sorry, no poop joke.
Would an idiot do that?
Oh, yeah. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Why are bangs a bad thing? Bangs can be a good look. Map, but I go in there. Oh! And a great sports update right here. Here's Rich Ackerman.
Sports Flash.
Great might be a stretch.
Great job, Sean. Really appreciate
always,
you.
Buddy.
Christmas time is here.
I'll take rind every time.
You guys have a good day.
He has a long neck.
Diabetes.
Good night now.
Holy crap, Alvy. Bravo. One of the best ever.
Good night now.